Okay. Okay.
Yes, there we go. Dipti is away this week, so because of that, I'll be stepping in today and on Thursday. Unfortunately, I need to travel a little bit as well, so I'll be coming back in and out. So on Wednesday and on Thursday in the lab hours, I won't be there, I think. So I hope that the TAs are there and that you have enough support from the TAs. Otherwise, on Friday, I'm going to be back. So if you need some help, then on Friday, I should be in the office. So, but Wednesday and probably Thursday, I won't be able to be in the lab to help you out. And I'll be traveling in between as well. So there's no much help in lining up in front of my office, unfortunately. So if I understand correctly, you've been through ER modeling, entity relationships, modeling, and as you could see, it's very easy. I mean, you have a box, and you have some lines, and you put in some text here and there. That's about it. But the hard part is to actually make a useful model. And the only way to learn that is to actually practice. So that's why we have the assignments, and that's why today as well, I'm going to go through some examples, and I think Dipti has gone through quite a few examples, because the only way to go through and check if you understand it is to actually test some of the constructs. So what is the extended ER modeling? You have been, all of you have done UML before, so you know the class diagrams. So what is the most obvious thing you do in an object-oriented program? You subclass. You define subclasses. And you have inherited features. You inherit functions. You inherit variables. Now, the thing with a database is that we model just the data, not the functionality, not the functions, not the operations. So we don't have any functions here. We just have data that can be inherited. You are familiar with the terms aggregation and composition as well. I will cover it very briefly towards the end. Probably not today. I'm going to probably spend too much time, so it's probably going to be on Thursday. But towards the end of the EER, I'm going to say a little bit about composition and aggregation. And personally, I don't see them adding so much to data modeling. They make more sense, I feel, in the class diagrams and in data diagrams, UML for data, but we'll talk about it. And if you find them useful, use them. So what's the main purpose of conceptual modeling? Why do we do that? Any thoughts about it? We want to create an overview. So it's really about communication. We would like to communicate with customers, communicate with programmers, communicate with the database designers. So it's all about communication, which means that if we feel that composition and aggregation communicates better than not using it, then we are free to use it. If we feel that subclassing and aggregation and composition just makes our models hard to understand, then forget about it. It's all about what communicates the best. How do we at the best communicate how we understand the user needs to something that can be implemented? That's really what this is all about. So it's not, so modeling is kind of a challenging task because it's not usually not one correct solution. There are many, many wrong solutions. So be sure. I mean, you can come up with many that are obviously wrong for many reasons, but there could be potentially several that are equally good. Or they are good and they have strengths and weaknesses. And which strength and which weakness are more important, we have to start discussing with customers and the users. So the enhanced entity relationship model, we already said a little bit about it, it's to have more semantics. And what is that type of semantics we want to have? Well, the semantics of composition and aggregation. We'll talk about that semantics a bit later, but the subclassing, what is the semantics? It means that we have some specialization hierarchy where certain entities, they have commonalities, they share something in common, and sometimes this common class can be used to represent all classes. In some cases, we have relationships or attributes that just apply to some of the subclasses. So that's the semantics. And it was, as you can see from the enhanced, it was not originally there in the first EER. So EER diagrams are quite old. So the EER modeling, conceptual modeling, is quite old. And in the first few generations of EER modeling, the whole idea of subclassing was not there. And you'll see next week. Dipti is going to be back next week, and then your task will be to convert these nice conceptual models into a relational model. Because in the end, we need to create tables. And have any of you so far seen in MySQL or in SQL a sub-relation? Relation, super-relation, sub-relation? We don't have that concept. So subclasses need to be implemented using some of the regular relational concepts like foreign keys and joins. That's how we create a relational model based on conceptual models. So what we're going to do now, next week you have to step back. You have to say, okay, how can we implement without having specific sub-relations or sub-tables in the database. We don't have that. We need to implement it ourselves. Say, how are we going to break this hierarchy into relational tables with foreign keys and everything? That's for next week. I'm just going to tell you that this week we worry about the communication. We worry about how can we best describe the needs. And next week, then you have to worry about how we will implement this in a relational database in which the whole notion of subclasses is not known. You know this? Superclass? That would be the general object, the one that has many different types of occurrences. And you may have just one subclass, or you have many subclasses. So as you know from object-oriented programming. And then the subclass will be the one that is inheriting the superclass. So far, this should be known from object-oriented programming. Now, what we worry about here in the modeling, where we want to be more specific than just define class structure, is we worry about whether superclasses have overlapping or distinct subclasses. In programming, we don't necessarily distinguish so much. I mean, we can have subclasses, but we don't typically say that, okay, it has to be in this or that subclass. We can enforce it, but usually you don't model it, as these are disjoint or non-overlapping. But when we do modeling, because as you're going to see next week, if they overlap, you may want to implement it very differently in the database than if they don't overlap. Then you have alternative ways to implement in the relational database. Now, this you already have in object-oriented programming. So what when you have the case where not all members of a subclass need to be member of a not all members of a superclass need to be member of a subclass. So you have a superclass and you have subclass. And some superclass entities don't have a subclass, but some do. If we require all superclasses to be a subclass, how would we then specify the superclass in object-oriented languages? Do you remember? So the superclass can never exist just as a superclass. You need a subclass. Abstract, exactly. If it's abstract, it means that it can never exist. It can only exist through its subclasses. And that's the same thing here. We would like to be able to express that, that we have abstract, we can't have, we have abstract classes, which means that the superclass can never be instantiated. We never find any occurrence of just a superclass. We will always find one of the specific subclasses. And in some cases, you may have superclass occurrences, and you have subclass occurrences mixed up. And our task when we design EER models and specialization trees would be to define and decide on these things. Should they overlap vertically, meaning between the subclasses, and can there be superclass elements that are not in one of the subclasses? That is really the core questions, that these are the core questions that we need to address when we do this. The subclassing is sometimes quite confused with composition. So we will, and I think you've been there, but hopefully you have passed that stage where a subclass becomes similar to composition. For instance, is a bike wheel a bike? No, it's not. It's part of a bike. It's not a, so a bike wheel. So what about then about a one-wheel bike? Well, it has more than just a wheel. So it's not a part of. So the critical question to ask, if when we want to see if there is a subclass, is will all these elements in the subclass, will they always be also a superclass occurrence? That's one thing. So a student will always be a person. I have never, I mean, if you sign up monkeys or horses for some training, then they aren't students, they are something else. Students, the semantics of student will imply that it's always a person. We will never have a student that's not a person. So if you have a dog training course, you will not refer to the dogs as students. They will be dogs. So an implication of that is that all the attributes that we define on the superclass would be inherited. You know that as well from UML. I mean, all methods and all attributes defined on the superclass are there in the subclass. And that makes, that's why this is convenient for us when we model, because now we can store, we can put all those attributes that are common to all the subclasses just in the superclass. We don't have to have many elements or many entities with the same list of attributes. We can put them in one place and they can be represented in one place, which is convenient. And that's also because of that. Here it says specialization slash generalization. So what would generalization be? Any thoughts about generalization? How would that come in play here? Superclass, meaning what? Right. A superclass is a general, more general term than the subclasses. You have other suggestions? So what it's saying is that the generalization, you collect all the general attributes with the superclass. So you can generalize, you don't have to repeat that. Now, but there's also something with the methodology or how you design, because sometimes when you design, you start realizing that, let's say for, I don't remember exactly, I have to admit that I didn't look carefully at the assignment you have this year, but we have had assignments before where you could see people in different relations. So a person can be the inventor of an idea, a person could be a student, a person could be a mentor. So you have very different roles of person. So if you start by designing person, 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 then you end up having the same person in several tables. And now generalization means that, okay, rather than having the same information spread around the tables, we put these into a hierarchy. Originally, we didn't have a hierarchy, but now we see that we have to represent information about people many places in our model, and then it makes sense to collect everything that is common to people into one table and inherit, because then we know that all information about people, their name, their phone number, contact information, is stored one place. So rather than a top-down design where we start saying, okay, what are the superclasses we have here, we started by realizing that we had many special classes that they all share something, and now we aggregate. And I think in programming you realize the same thing. You start by creating these special classes, and then you start seeing, these are actually quite similar. So rather than starting by designing the superclass and then the subclasses, you realize from many subclasses that they share something, and then you generalize. Then you start, okay, what is common? And that common is the attribute that you put into the superclass. Exactly. Yeah, so specialization is top-down, and generalization is bottom-up. And it's not like we choose one or the other. In most projects, we have to go between the two of them. We start by having this, we don't know what it is, so we start trying to understand what it is, and then we start getting all the details, and then we say we generalize. And then, okay, then we extend our generalized model by suggesting more subclasses and a more detailed hierarchy. And then, as we work on, we start realizing, hey, this and this and this look quite similar, so we should aggregate and create new hierarchies. So that's, you have probably not programmed that much, but this is quite common in programming as well. Sometimes you will do refactoring. You realize that, okay, I'm basically implementing the same functionality in many different classes. That's probably not a good design. I would like to put it together in a generalization hierarchy. So, as I said at the beginning, ER modeling, it's not complex because you have so complex notation. You have boxes and lines, and you put text around. But now we have a couple of more types of text and boxes or lines. And as you remember from UML, we use the triangle for denoting subclassing. So the superclass is at the top of the triangle, or bottom if you draw it the other way around, or on the side. So the point of the arrow points to the superclass. And underneath or on the side, you have the special classes. The thing that comes in the braced parentheses would be constraints. And we'll talk about them later. We start by just looking at the hierarchy as such, and then we come back to the constraints. As I said, when we implement tables, there is nothing like a subclass in the relational database. You don't have subtables. So it's all going to end up in one big table or in multiple tables with foreign keys. That's what we could do in the relational database. And in this case, it shows an example where the superclass, the staff class, is to the left, and then we have in the middle, we have the attributes that are relevant for branch managers. So we see that there are lots of nulls there. So if you see here, and this here, the staff with SD37, SD66, SA9, SL89, SL31, they don't have a manager start date because they aren't managers. So they have no start date. But they are still there in the one table. So it's all mixed up. Superclasses, superclasses. And sales personnel, they have some other attributes. And secretarial staff have the final one. It would also be quite common, and that's what you're going to be, that's going to be suggested next week, is to have a flag here. A flag saying whether this person is a manager, is a salesperson, and is secretary. Because otherwise, you will have to actually query it to see, do they have a typing speed? And what now if you don't have, if you hire somebody, you don't know their typing speed, how would you then know that they are secretaries? So it's quite common, and you will see that next week, that you do have flags. Say, okay, this is a manager, this is a sales representative, and this is a secretary. But in this case, it's just you just look at the data. And you see the big nulls, the big areas of null here, null values here, null values here, will be the typical consequence of putting it all in one table. And as you know from last week, the other way of doing it is to have separate tables and foreign keys. So you have a table of secretaries, you have a table of salespersons, you have a table of managers, and they will refer to the staff table. And that you'll talk about next week, which one to choose in each of the potential cases. Now, if we want to represent this, rather than this one big table that doesn't communicate the fact that we actually do have different types of, we just see staff. And it's hard to say, know that we are considering these classes of staff. So because of that, we would like now to create a class hierarchy representing this. So here, staff is the superclass, and staff number, all our staff, all our employees do have a staff number. So it's stored here with the staff. They all have a name, the position is here, the salary is here. Because no matter who you are, if you are a manager, if you are a secretary, if you are a salesperson, you will have a name, you will have a salary, you are hired for a certain position. So it's all shared. And then the subclasses will be manager, sales personnel, and secretary. And you can see that they have their special attributes. The one that we saw from here. If you go here, so you see the manager date and bonus will be specific to managers. Sales area and car allowance will be specific for salesperson. And typing speed is this one specific for secretary staff. So that's how we ended up with this one. Now, remember that what we model would be for each entity, we have the attributes, we have the primary key, and we have the relations. So if you start by looking at the attributes, then these are the common attributes. So they have been inherited. Why is there no primary key in the subclasses? Why don't we, there should always be a primary key. All entities should have a primary key. Why is there no primary key here in the salesperson? It's inherited. It's there. It comes from here. Everything here, you can think of it, everything here as being copied down here. But you don't need to copy it because it's implicit. That's the semantics that this specialization implies. So because there's a specialization here, it means that staff number is here. So you will never specify primary key on the subclass. It's given from the superclass. If you have multiple inheritance, it can be a bit trickier. Then you may need to do something to say which one you, or actually which one you're going to use as the one when you implement this. You have to decide which is the one that's going to be the primary key in the relational model. But here in the conceptual model, it's fine. Having multiple primary keys will be fine. And also, that's also something that is worth finding. Here, we have this manager's relation. So the manager's relation will tell which branch a certain manager is managing. If we had no subclassing, then we will have branch has a staff and staff has and the branch has a manager. But we couldn't say that only managers could be a manager, because then we could have a secretary being the manager. But by having subclasses, we could specifically say that only managers can manage a department. We can limit that. So it allows us to communicate much better. Because otherwise, if we didn't have subclassing, we would just have that some staff is a manager. We couldn't limit that relationship to the set of managers, and potentially leading into inconsistent data. Questions or comments? Yeah, and the optional and we're going to come back to the constraints. So, again, generalization. the higher up, the more general, the lower down, the more special the class or the entity would be. So here we have staff with ID, name and age, full-time has salary and holidays, and part-time will have an hourly rate and contract type, meaning how many hours per week or the percentage of the position and what type of contract they are on. Now, this one, I think we should play with Menti again so I get to see what you're thinking. So let's go to, we haven't done that in a long time. It's about time. So let's do the Menti. So, which attributes are inherited in the entity 132, which is the one down here? Which are the inherited attributes? And I'm not gonna show you the answers until 20 have 20 responses. So we're gonna wait here until 20 of you have responded. You bring up Menti, 486667 is the code, and you say what you think. Choose among the alternatives. So the alternatives will be, okay, start seeing the answers. So the alternatives will be listed on your app. So if you look at your app, you're going to find the... Okay, so you're more than 20. Yeah, good. There shouldn't be much... much to discuss because we know it's going to inherit and inheritance is transitional. So whatever we inherit from here will be passed along here and will be passed down here. So it's from the top of the hierarchy is ABC, from 1-3 is IJ, and L is the local one. So it's not inherited, it's a local one. Perfect. Now, poor example. So we have this staff with ID, name, age, have two subclasses, the full-time and the part-time. And why is this a poor design? Again, why is it a poor design to do this way? We should see. Oops, I need to show results. Okay. Salary should be in the staff entity, is one proposal. It depends on how hourly rate is defined. If hourly rate is defined as the per hour salary, then you don't need to. But if that would be the rate of salary, then you need to know kind of what is the base salary, and this would be the hourly rate. What was the other choice? Was there shouldn't be two subclasses. So how many subclasses should there be then? No? One? Three? At least we see that there is a difference between full-time and part-time. And the difference may be that the full-time has a salary, while part-time has a hourly salary. So they get paid by the hours, while the full-time get paid by the year salary. If that's the case, then you need to store what is the year salary and what's the hourly salary. And hourly salary will not apply to the full-time staff, and salary will not apply to the part-time because they have the hourly rate. That's what they get paid. They report hours and they get paid by their rate multiplied by the hours. So might be that the answers depend on how we interpret the drawings. As I said, models are about communication, and as we are seeing, just the models alone will not always carry everything you want to know. So having a description on the side, specify more clearly what you mean and what how this is to be interpreted, specifying the attributes and the meaning and also the value area, or what is the domain, would make sense and will help in the communication. And there was one saying that name and age should be in both subclasses. Well, it doesn't have to be because it's inherited, so it will automatically be there. We don't have to specify them specifically. So the big thing here that we repeat gender. Gender is repeated in both subclasses, which means that it should be stored in the superclass rather than being specific to the subclass. Now, next one. We have, again, staff, ID, name, age, full-time staff, salary, holidays, and the cars the staff have, the registration and the color of the staff cars. What is the problem? Let's see. Now you have to write in a little bit of text. What's the problem with this model? Car isn't staff. Yeah, I would not like to have a car as my colleague or as my boss. So you may have a staff car, but the car is not staff. I mean, you can have, as I said, staff cars. You can have a pool of cars, but they will never be staff. And I pay a lot to my car, but that's that's not a salary. That's called repair. So, if you go through the specialization, let's say with this example, I think it's from the book, it looks like the font type from the book. So you have staff, and they some of them manage the branch, which is a superclass. And now you look at subclasses depending on the role. And as I said, the role is that they are managers, or sales personnel, or secretary. So that's one hierarchy. But as we said, we can have multiple hierarchies. And this, not all programming language will allow a multiple inheritance, meaning that one superclass, or that's different. That would mean that this one could be a part of another hierarchy. Not all programming language would allow that. But in the modeling here, we are free to do so. We can say that secretary here could also inherit something else. So we will have multiple inheritance automatically. But also we have the possibility to have multiple hierarchies with the same top level entity. So here, staff, we have different roles and we have different contracts of employment. So they are hired on different types of contracts. And this is something to think of when we're modeling, to try to separate the semantics, separate the issues, so we don't mix up because it could be, you may think of having managers being in a full-time and a part-time sub-hierarchy, and sales personnel in a sub-hierarchy, but then again we start having a complex diagram, and the subclassing will be repeated. So we could say, no, all staff can be either full-time or part-time. It doesn't have to be a subclass of manager or personnel or secretary. So we have to kind of distinguish between the concepts and see where they are orthogonal, meaning that they can be on the side, or whether they only apply to a part of the tree. So that's the overall. Now we come to the constraints. So we were seeing that in the curly braces, we were describing two types of constraints. One we call the participation constraint, which defines, so participation means, would the parent have to be a participant in the subclass? That's why we call it participation constraint. So will the parent have to be a member of one of the subclasses? And we say mandatory, which would be the same as we have an abstract, as we said before, abstract class, then they're mandatory, because we cannot have anything that is not a subclass. Or optional, which means it's a regular hierarchy. It can be, you may have just superclass occurrences, and you may have subclass occurrences. And then you have the disjoint. So remember that participation is vertically, it's a relation between super and sub. Disjoint would be between the subs, so it's horizontally. Disjoint means that is it possible that you can be a member of two or more of the subclasses, or can you only be part of one of the subclasses? So if you are a professor, can you also be a student? Maybe you can. Maybe you can sign up for a course to be a student. Maybe you cannot. Maybe either you are a professor or you are a student. Couldn't be both. So these are the things that we need to determine when we do EER modeling. We need to say, okay, will we allow professors to be students too? Can they sign up for a course being a student, or could they never do that? That would be the kind of decision we need to do on the horizontal axis, on the disjoint. So, mandatory would be superclass must be a member of subclass, and the superclass is an abstract class. Optional, a superclass member need not be a member of subclass, and the superclass itself may be instantiated, or you may have occurrences. Disjoint, for disjoint we use OR. Now, if you look at the specification of disjoint, it says that when a superclass member is a member of only one subclass. Is that how we typically semantically think of OR? It can only be one or the other. That's typically exclusive OR. Exclusive OR means that it's that, but not that one at the same time. So OR here, you can more think of it as being exclusively in one of the classes. And means that it can be one and the other and the other and the other. So it's kind of opposite to the logic, because we think and would be the one that is the most limiting and OR would be the one that's most open, but in this case it would be kind of the other way around. And meaning that they are disjoint. So it could be in one and the other and the other and the other and the other. So we then have our four combinations. We have two individual constraints, one of the participation and one of the disjoint. And we can combine them the other way. So mandatory OR. Mandatory means that it will have to be one of the subclasses, or it can be just one. So an example here, in our case, if you are a student, you have to be in one level. The qualification framework, the European qualification framework for studies says that you cannot be a member at multiple levels. You have to complete level one before you get to level two. Oh, level two, you can choose level one courses, but you will be at level two, you will be a master student. A PhD student can choose bachelor courses, can choose master courses, but he is and will be a PhD student. So you can't be both a PhD student and a master student. You can't be both a master student and a bachelor student. They are exclusive. And there are no students that are none, because you have a student here, we need to know what courses you can sign up for, so we need to know that you are one of these. If nothing else, you are a bachelor student. I'm sorry to say, that's kind of the default entry level. Mandatory and. Again, mandatory means that anything in the superclass will have to exist as one of the subclasses. But in this case, you can be more than one. So a university user may be a staff member or a student or both. I'm teaching at the master's level, and some of my colleagues have been my students as well. On one side, they are lecturers, lecturing bachelor courses, and they're students of my master course, because they're master students. So you could be both. You could be both a student and a staff member. You don't have to choose one. Optional, meaning that it can be a subclass, but doesn't have to be. It can also be the subclass, or they are exclusive, so you can't have overlap. So staff is either permanent or contractual. So when we hire people, we hire them, and we don't hire people that are neither. They have to be either her permanent contract or permanent staff, and get to be here until they get fired or they resign or they get old, or contractual staff. And contractual staff, they're hired for a period. After 3 years, the contract is typically ended, and after that, it can be renewed, but that's a new contract. And these are the only two. And optional says, optional, we may have others. So optional means that we may have student assistants, TAs, they have their special. So TAs, they are special, they are not contractual, classified as contractual, they're not as permanent staff, but they are their own types of staff. And we have other staff that are not, might be guest visitors that are assigned as user of the system here. And then optional and member of staff, maybe researcher, maybe lecturer, but doesn't have to be either of them. It's just a member of staff. So it could be a secretary, it could be a project lead, it could be anything, but it may be a researcher or maybe a lecturer. So again, it's it may be overlapping, and it's optional in the other direction. I think we take a break there, and then we go for some examples and go through and try to sort out everything here after the break. Unless there are some questions before the break. Yep, then we'll meet quarter past.